but I do notice a lot that parents are not accepting, and they're judging their children very negatively. And I think that's, you know, one of the most harmful things.
Welcome back to Grime America Outlawed. We are going to be chatting with Mattis Miller a little bit later about his masculinity book. Fun chat. Good chat. We get into all sorts of stuff. The second hour, extra jan with some little bit of touchy stuff. It's a good chat, though. Fun one. Of course, yeah, these ones are always sort of fun when we get to talk about being a man. Man, your face is bright over there, Dunlop. Do you have a window in that place? I didn't think you had a window in that room.
That's better, eh?
That is much better. Yeah. So I got my food allergy test today.
Oh, did you really? Wow. Yeah. What do you mean?
Wow.
you sent blood to somebody?
Well, I just went to the clinic, to the naturopath clinic.
And okay.
They sent the blood off. I guess I probably could have ordered the test to my house, but.
Oh, you didn't get the results. You just did the test.
Today. I know. I don't get the results for 2 weeks.
Okay. Well, that'll be interesting. That'll be great.
Yeah.
So it was blood then?
Yeah, they prick your finger.
Yeah.
Not even a needle, but I don't know if that's just because a naturopath isn't allowed to give you a needle or what. But I've had things in the past where they pricked my finger. I think it's a different type of blood.
Yeah, no, they can do that. I mean, my naturopath gives me prolotherapy needles, so.
Does he take blood, though?
No.
It might be a different kind of blood, I feel like. But I don't know anything about that.
Who knows?
It's a good chat with Mattis Miller. Like I say, it's fun because I've gone down that sort of path. I've read a lot of those books. And it was a good chat. What's his background?
Well, I mean, he's got quite the background. He's LCSW, ACT, DBT /
holy fuck.
LBC.
I don't even know what those mean.
He's the founding director, certified cognitive behavioral therapist.
Does that mean he's like bisexual?
As the founder, director, and supervisor at the Center for the Cognitive and Behavioral Therapy of New Jersey, he's a licensed clinical social worker and certified cognitive behavioral therapist with over 15 years of experience. He's got an impressive education and training background, includes certification in CBT from the Academy of Cognitive Therapy and the Beck Institute of Cognitive Behavioral Therapy. He's also been awarded the newly developed certification from the DBT, Leinen Board of Certification in Dialectical Behavioral Therapy. That's kind of what his book is about. It's the dialectical thing. And I like how he's very much like, there's this truth and this truth and both sides have the truth and there's somewhere in the middle. Like, he's very much in the middle of everything, you know, like take a little bit from each thing. It's very, you know, subjective truth. So his expertise in CBT and intensive training in DBT and schema therapy compelled him to found the center and select the finest therapist to complete his team. He specializes in severe emotional and personality disorders, insomnia and anxiety in teens and adults. And he's a seasoned lecturer on CBT and DBT related topics, addressing parents, clients, and professionals. And he's presently focused primarily on supervision, education, and consultants. And he's written this book called The Uncontrollable Child. And he's also done a bunch of speaking with, like he mentions in the show, about large groups of teachers about mindfulness and stuff like that. He's spoken to hundreds of people on the benefits of mindfulness. So it's a pretty fascinating chat.
It's a good one, even better one to get the second hour on. If you haven't done that already, we encourage you to do so. But even if not, I'm sure you'll find something here in the free section to enjoy and take away. Enjoy the chat with Mattis Miller.
All right, Mattis Miller, welcome to Grimerica Outlawed. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, me too. I enjoyed your book. It's The Uncontrollable Child. I'd love to get into that, but I think we should start out by a little bit of background and how you know this is your first book, as you mentioned. Yes. Before we started recording, and maybe how you started thinking about writing that.
So, as a clinical psychotherapist, I work with adults, adolescents, with a variety of issues, anxiety, depression, mood disorders, personality disorders, childhood trauma. And I actually found, I started doing a lot of consultations. And as I got more experience, people would come just for a one-off meeting with me, wanting to get some guidance. And very often I'd have parents come in struggling with their children, parenting their children. And there's a wide range of information out there. I mean, there are great podcasts, books, there's loads of information. I mean, you can just do a search. You can get videos on just about anything. I did feel that there was something that was missing in my work with individuals and parent training. And I also felt is that it's so important. We know so many of the problems that we struggle with in daily life is because of the difficulties we had during childhood.
Right.
And that parent-child interaction.
Yeah.
And I felt if I can help parents, help children, especially most specifically children who are more sensitive, emotionally sensitive, or any child. And what I felt was, is I saw that people would vacillate to extremes, especially specifically children. They would actually move from, are you with me?
Yep.
Okay. They would vacillate on extremes. They would go from to a place of being very accepting, you know, no limits, a lot of positivity, just letting going with the flow. And then there would be the other extreme where parents were very, very critical and punitive and harsh. And it was either one or the other. And I felt that they really needed help with that balance of accepting, loving, connecting to their child, at the same time helping put up those limits, move towards change, implement consequences, and understand that it's not an exact path, but you have to integrate those ideas to find the middle path. And as I was sitting there, and I was recommending a lot of good parenting books, I was like thinking to myself, I wish I can't see these people. I can't help them. I wish they could, but I wanted them to have the book. So finally I said, okay, I got to do this. And I jumped in.
That's great. It seems overwhelming to me because like I mentioned to you, I'm not a parent, I don't think, at least not that I know of. And Darren's the dad of two great little girls, 9 and 7. And it seems overwhelming. When I think about what parenting would be like, I'm overwhelmed. I'm like, how do they figure all this stuff out? And there's so much information out there. Like I think you say in the beginning of your book, it's almost overload, right? There's so much information for parents, but I guess that would be why you tried to dial it into something more digestible.
Right. And the answer is it's not the book, as I say in the book also. It's not the manual. And I think all the information is important. It's just to help you give a perspective that you can integrate all that you've learned. And Graham, what you're saying is so true. I mean, even not as a parent, understanding parenting is hard. And I think parents need that validation and understanding. And that's the tone of my book too, is that there are those wonderful, joyous, fun, loose times. And then there are those challenges. I mean, sometimes we can have a child who could be more challenging than others. And sometimes just because our own state, I mean, we have a lot of responsibility and we're emotionally vulnerable in our struggles and coming home and interacting with your children, especially when they're pushing back or they're not listening, or perhaps they're struggling with some disorder. It's really, really hard.
And it's the most important job in the world right now. I mean, I think, especially right now. I mean, I feel like parents have the most important job.
Yes. Yes. I appreciate you saying that.
Trying to raise a good kid.
Yeah. And I think most, I would say even all parents want that. You know, sometimes you look around and say, oh my gosh, I can't believe how are you treating their kids like that? That's crazy. Like, do you even care about your children? And I think all of us really do. We want our children to grow up healthy. We want them to be successful. We want them to feel good about themselves and have confidence. We really want what's best for them.
So let's dig into the book a little bit, because it's, I mean, like I was saying to you in email, I really felt like even though I'm not a parent, the book resonated with me. A lot of the things you talk about in there, like acceptance and listening and mindfulness and is stuff that you could use in your corporate career or in your any kind of relationship. It seems like there's some really good just general relationship advice in there as well.
Yeah. And it's based on concepts, evidence-based psychotherapy, such as dialectic behavioral behavior therapy and cognitive behavior therapy and other third wave cognitive behavioral therapies and acceptance and motivation. And these concepts are, as you said, Graham, they are very much being utilized in corporate settings, in businesses, with many, many issues, a variety of issues. Even in schools, they're teaching a lot of these dialectical behavioral skills to children and adolescents. And I just wanted to take this information and apply it to parenting, because I thought it's information that can be so helpful to parents when they're interacting with their children. And that's where I took these concepts. But in truth, they are being used all over the world in many different ways.
So let's get into some of those. If I mean, we don't have to go chapter by chapter or anything like that, but maybe some of the more important ones to start with. Like acceptance, to me, really rang a bell.
Yeah.
You know,
I think acceptance is probably the hardest piece, because as I just said, like, we all want goals. We all want our children to be successful and to, you know, go and have certain values and move on a certain path. And, you know, all those things are super important to us. And when we see things that are not going according to the way our wishes are, or our hopes, or our dreams, or our fantasies, that gets us really, really upset. And immediately, I think as humans, the first thing we want to do is fix it. We want to change it. We want to solve the problem. We're problem solvers. You know, you have a problem in your tech, in your sound. The first thing is you got to fix it. You're not going to just run to acceptance. And I think a lot of times parents and people are fighting and fighting and only focused on change. And that leads to a lot of suffering. And as we say in dialectic behavioral therapy, and I bring in the book, is that pain plus non-acceptance equals suffering. Pain plus acceptance equals pain, and sometimes intense. And what we don't realize is sometimes we're fighting and fighting for change because we don't want our child to be a certain way, or we don't approve of their behaviors, or we're just frustrated with their academic challenges, or their moods, or their sensitivity, or their reactivity, or their impulsivity. We want to work towards change. At the same time, acceptance is something that we don't want to accept. And there are a lot of reasons why that is. And I think firstly is because for many, acceptance feels like approval. Acceptance feels like I'm saying it's okay. Yeah. Acceptance feels like I'm also like giving up. I'm done. I'm just going to accept this. I have to live my life like this. And that can be, again, relatable to many. And I think one of the things I try to give over to parents and to individuals is that those are myths. Acceptance doesn't mean you have to be approved or be happy with it. Acceptance doesn't mean that change is not a possibility. Accepting is actually embracing the moment and the reality of what is in the moment. And if change comes, can you imagine someone's going for chemotherapy treatment and, you know, it's not working. And the doctors come in and say, you know, we tried everything. And they work really hard and they have to accept. They have this terminal illness and they just have to move forward in their lives. And then a few weeks later, they hear about a new drug that's very promising. They say, no, I'm on the acceptance train right now. I'm not taking, right? And that's not what we mean. We just mean for in the moment when change is not being affected, is moving towards acceptance. And I want to say one more piece on that is acceptance is often the key to change.
Why is that?
Because when we accept what is, let's say I have a child who has a diagnosis of ADHD or has a learning difficulty, and I just want to ignore it. I don't want to accept it. When I can go ahead and accept the reality of that struggle, then I can actually move towards change. I can get them the help they need. I can acknowledge that they might need different academic, they might need certain intervention or strategies. But if I'm fighting that reality, then I can't heal. And think about grieving. Think about if we lost someone we love and we're not accepting that. We can't move on. Another reason why we don't want to accept, because acceptance often leads to sadness. It leads to pain. And we don't want to feel pain. We want to do everything not to feel pain. And we want to stay stuck in our anger. But what we know is if we can accept and we can allow the pain it is short-lived, and it can help us move towards peace. So when you accept, you know, through the grieving process, and you move towards acceptance, or even think someone who has an addiction, you know, we know that whole idea of accepting what they can control and what they can't control. Once they accept the reality of their struggle, then they can seek help and they can move towards change. But when they're in denial, or when they're in fighting, or they're just saying there's no hope, then the chances of a change are even less. So it is paradoxical.
Yeah, yeah, I love that. It's very powerful. I come from the addiction world, so yeah, the serenity prayer, you know?
Exactly.
God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change and the courage to change the things I can. I mean, it's... Yeah, that's pretty powerful. And I like how you give examples in the book of this stuff working in action, you know? Like examples with children, with kids, with this, you know... done one way and done the other way and the way it would be communicated. And it feels like you, it's not just words, you know, you're putting this stuff into, like it's, functional advice, you know, it seems very functional.
Yeah. Well, Graham, thank God I have six kids.
Oh, wow.
So I got lots of it. Darren could appreciate he's got two. So I got a lot of time to practice these skills. So it's really functional. It's really real to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And it's, I actually had a story recently I was saying over, someone shared with me just a simple example where their child was not playing at recess with the other kids and there was some social issues and mom so badly wanted her little boy to play with the other kids. So she started teaching him social skills, bribing him, and it just wasn't working. He wasn't playing at recess. And then she realized, she actually came across the book someone shared with me. She's like, maybe I need to just accept, like, this is who he is right now and stop fighting this. And the next time the child came over and was talking about recess, say, you know what, sweetheart, don't worry about it. You know, you play, you don't play. And for the first time, the child opened their mouth and said, but ma, I'm scared.
Yeah, there you go. Wow.
And never expressed the emotion because never felt accepted in that moment. And once mother said, wow, and validated the emotion, they worked together to address the fear. And now the child is playing by recess.
That's a great example.
Yeah. And not every example, and that's the thing I teach people all the time, not every time does it work out so beautifully. It's just more effective. And that's why one of the skills I teach in the book is looking at the pros and cons of acceptance. Look at the pros and cons of fighting reality. Think about the short term. Think about the long term of moving towards acceptance. And get ourselves into that wise, mindful state to realize that when we're fighting reality, we're actually creating more tension. I think about that teen who's like sleeping in every day. And, you know, dad, mom keep knocking on that door, screaming at them to get up. You're not going to have a life. How do you expect to get into college? Day in, day out, you know? And they're, because they care, they love, they want to help their child. They're getting frustrated. And I ask them, is this working? So, you know, the third time you knock or scream, they say, oh, mom, I'm so sorry. You're right. College is so important. I better get going. That's not what's happening. And when they actually accept, it also gives the child the idea to reflect and think about their own responsibilities and move towards change. But the fighting and not accepting actually leads to more tension, more pain, more problems in the relationship between parents and child.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Darren, do you got any comments on that?
How much of this parenting problem, I guess, is because it's all got to be us at the end of the day, right? I mean, it's something we're falling short of, or I mean, the kid's not always right, obviously, but I don't know. I feel like we've really sort of, there's an epidemic sort of just lazy helicopter parenting. So you're there all the time. So you think you're helping, but really you're just sort of micromanaging all their choices. And it's, you know, all of a sudden the kid doesn't trust themselves to make any choices. And, you know, I feel like, and then we went through the whole, everybody gets a ribbon sort of phase, which I don't think was really good at the end of the day. And you know, I feel like, I don't know how far back it goes. I'm only, you know, 40, but, you know, my generation's parents had a different set of problems that maybe we're overcompensating for now, and not everybody, but you know, in general, it's definitely going around. So I guess the question is how much of the blame falls on the shoulders of the parents in these sort of situations?
Yeah, I love that. You know, I'll tell you that. And I was going to write the book. I was going to call it The Uncontrollable Parent, but I didn't think it would sell.
That's what Darren just said before we started this with you, before we got on the phone. He's like, we need one called The Uncontrollable Parent.
Right. You know what? I don't think it's about blame, and you know, Darren, I'm about
blame's a bad word. Blame's a bad word. I don't know what a better word would be, but I guess responsibility.
Yeah, yeah. And I think
at some point there's a responsibility to be the adult and to not take shit personally and to realize that, you know, it's a kid who's forming, you know, their own sort of boundaries and personality and you know, small things can have long-lasting implications.
Yeah, I want to say a few things on that. Absolutely. And really, the truth is, for a child, parents are responsible to try to meet their needs, their emotional needs, their physical needs. As they get older, I mean, there's a reason why in our legal system, right, a child ultimately is not as responsible as an adult. There's a difference. Now, as adults, or once we get into the world, our parents perhaps may have caused many problems, but we're responsible to deal with them. We got to fix them. But like you're saying is, to our children, you know, we are responsible. And the way to get unstuck from something you're saying, and I talk a lot about this concept of judgment. And judgment is where we go ahead and we evaluate our children's behaviors, their actions, their emotions, as good or bad. And by doing that, we put it on them. They should be different. That's the should, where we put our interpretation on how they should act. And like you said, and let them figure it out. And ultimately, really, we are responsible. And what's helpful for that is what I teach is to look at cause. Look at, like, I love what you were saying in terms of, you know, whatever that child's struggle is, there are certain things that are leading to their behavior. So if they're impulsive, if they're being sensitive, if they're not following through with their schoolwork, right? Rather than looking at judging it as bad and just letting it be or telling them how they should do it, take a step back and look at what's leading to that behavior. What's the cause of that emotion? And try to get an acceptance, again, an understanding of where it is. And then once you look at causes, it's much more effective to help address causes than to get stuck in blame. Am I answering? You're responding?
Yep. Yeah.
But how do you do that? Is that through more of the tools in your book, like mindfulness, or just really being in the moment and listening and like just watching the facial expressions, like not doing three different things while you're trying to pay attention to your kid at the same time, or
and mindfulness is
not taking things personally.
Absolutely. And I think both what you're both saying is true, as we say in dialectics. Maybe we'll get into that at some point.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it's the mindfulness, the awareness, the being present, and not only being mindful of your child or the environment, being mindful of your own emotion, your own thoughts, your own stuff that's getting in the way, as Darren would say. And you need to be able to regulate that, because we know that that's going to affect the child. And in turn, the child that's going to be affected by that will respond to you negatively, and that's going to escalate further and further and further. So you need to be aware of your own thoughts and emotions and struggles that are getting in the way. And a lot of that does, you know, I don't get too much into this in the book, but it does link back to your, you know, as Dan was saying, our own childhood, our own experiences, perhaps why there's a change between the last generation, this generation, back to that, going to extremes, you know, oh, we had it rough. It was the wrong way. Now we're giving everyone ribbons. Yeah. Now everyone gets trophies, you know, but that's it. Dialectics teaches us we need to move away from extremes and find middle ground. Hmm.
So how do you find the, let's get into more about how to find the cause then of that as well. Like,
yeah.
Like, let's say there's a problem you're dealing with. You don't know why a kid and a parent aren't getting along, but you got to sort of get to the root cause.
Yeah. So I think depending on the situation and the child, and sometimes the cause can be, you know, I give an example, maybe they have a certain, you know, it could be their biology. It could be their makeup. I mean, there are children that are born who are more emotionally sensitive. You know, they their feelings, when they feel an emotion, they feel it like a ton of bricks. They're like a burn patient, and every little thing triggers them. And that's not at their fault. That's a cause. It's their biology that's leading them to feel that way. Then there are some that might have executive functioning difficulties, like ADHD. Then there are some that they might be struggling academically in school, and that's hurting their confidence or their self-esteem. Perhaps the whatever they're putting down them is too difficult. Perhaps the cause is the daily structure. Perhaps the cause is they're not getting, you're observing that they need more attention. They need more love. They need more positivity. You know, there's just so much negativity in focus. Perhaps the cause is I realize that I'm fighting, getting back to acceptance, that I'm fighting my child. I want them to be something different. And that's what's leading to their behavior. They're fighting back. They're trying to give me a message. Leave me alone. Stop it. You know, so there can be, those are some examples.
How big of a role does diet play?
Yeah, well, we know it definitely plays a huge role in emotional vulnerability. Is that when we're either restricting or eating too much, that plays a role. And we also know, I mean, there's research out there that certain foods actually affect mood states and affect children. I think some of it, there are those who give it more credence than it perhaps deserves, like sugar makes kids go crazy. you know that myth. I mean, there's truth to it. I mean, sugar is not, too much sugar is not, too much of anything isn't good. Back to our balancing our extremes again. But, you know, I wouldn't say it plays a role. I know there are people out there who believe, well, if they just take these vitamins and these supplements and follow this rigid food routine, but there's no question about it. Sleep patterns, eating, physical exercise, those all help children and us as adults be more effective in our relationships and regulate our emotions and be able to think clear. I mean, just think of it. I mean, obviously, certainly consumption of alcohol and drugs affects us. But you think about what happens to the little infant child, you know, and when the child starts screaming and crying, what's the first thing that goes through your mind? Well, either
it's hungry, yeah.
Didn't get enough sleep, they need their nap, right? Or maybe the diaper needs to be changed. So those things can actually receive. There is evidence. Very clearly, those things do affect mood and behavior. You know, when that toddler is jumping around, jumping on those couches and screaming and yelling and fighting with everybody, like, okay, it's bedtime now. Like, this is the first thought that goes to your head. But we forget that. We forget that when we get older into teens and adults, like, that stuff affects us too. And it's important to keep in mind. Now, screaming at your teen to get to bed early every night, because I know, I read the research, you know, when I heard this podcast and they said sleep impairs your functioning. That's not going to be effective. And that's a really key point in mindfulness and throughout the book is, it's my favorite word actually, effectiveness. Doing what works. Getting unstuck of what, well, your parents did it the way, or it's principle, or it's right. For all I care, take my book and throw it in the garbage. If you have something else that works and it's being effective, do it.
How much of this, I mean, I kind of want to mix up my old question with Darren's comment about the parents. Like, how much of this is, how much could be solved if people would just pay attention to what's happening in the moment, like instead of being distracted on the, like, how much is technology impairing parenthood right now? You know, like whether it's in the, you know, in the kitchen after school or after, you know, there's just so many things going on now, you know, the TV, the phone, the whatever, like the computers. Yeah. I mean, how much could be solved if people just took 55 minutes or 15 minutes and just paid full attention to their kids or what's happening or listening properly, listening like 100%, being in the moment.
I think it would help a significant amount. At the same time, and there's my dialectical stance, I think sometimes we get stuck on like these absolutes or this must be the problem. And if we just do this, this would solve the problem. I do think it would help a lot. I saw this fascinating study recently, is that just having your phone in your pocket already decreases your attention on the moment by 20%.
Yeah.
Makes sense, right?
Was it you in your book that you said you put your phone away for a bit? You put it in the drawer or something? Or
yeah,
was that in your book? Yeah, yeah.
It could be.
Yeah, I think you had a little blurb in there about that, and it.
Yeah.
I started thinking.
I do that every so often, you know, too, because we are, and there's no question, and not just us, and we model for our children, and they also get disconnected, and there's loads of research coming out now that the parent-child relationship or all relationships are being impaired because we are not present and we are not connecting and we are not fully, wholly, completely in the moment. And we miss so many important things about ourselves, our own emotions, our children. I still remember when I walked in airports and I saw every table with those, you know, those screens on every single table food. I'm like, it was just, I felt my heart sink. Like, come on. Like, yeah, they have their phone. They have everything. Two people can't sit across the table from each other and just have a drink and enjoy each other's company. And so I would say, Graham, I think it's affecting a lot. Now, if I go back, I was going to say 100 years, but it's 20 years probably, right? If I would go back, were there no problems? Was life bliss? Was there not a lot of the struggles that we talk about parenting and our upbringings? I'm sure there were.
No, I mean, there's still the phones. I mean, people were on the phones all the time in the 80s. I mean, our phone used to be tied up for 5-6 hours a night, or the TV's on in the living room in front of the kitchen. That's true. People are watching their favorite show every night at 5 or 6 or whatever. I mean, there was still issues, and even 30 years ago, like technological distractions. But
there was definitely that.
Yeah. But I just feel like it's at a different level now because the kid, I don't know.
I mean, look, go, you know, you talk about the TVs and the phone and all that. I mean, walk into a restaurant and just watch, just observe and see how often, while people are sitting with other people, are taking out their devices, not devices 30 years ago that they have. And they're sitting there surfing the net, going on social media. They're so busy taking pictures of their food, they're not even enjoying it. You know, it's really impairing us in such a significant way at such a different level. And I think for children also, it's leading to a lot of mood struggles and irritability and isolation and lack of social connection. I mean, it goes on and on. I would say the pandemic, I mean, we just went through it or are going through still, you know, this pandemic. But I would say, in terms of our emotions, it's really problematic. And I think even more so, it's not just the distraction. It's what so many of our children are learning and seeing out in the world, which is affecting their mood, and they're getting anxious, and they're becoming more overwhelmed.
Right.
And so it's in a lot of levels.
And not just the affecting the parents' ability to parent or be present, but it's also a whole new challenge for, like, I don't think we had, I mean, my mom and dad probably got mad because I was on the phone too late at night, or maybe even computer games, maybe not, they weren't really there. But I mean, now there's all the things that now the parents have to deal with, you know, kids being up all night on computer games or on their devices, or there's also the parenting challenges that come with that now as well.
Yeah.
Like, how do you stop your kid from playing too many video games or being online too much or whatever?
So I do talk about that, and I talk a lot about limit setting. And I think that's an art that has been forgotten on how to set limits and how to say no. How can I say no to my child? You know, everyone else is doing it. And limit setting is it really important, not just for your environment and for your child. It's important to help them. And I talk a little bit about the research in the book, about growing up as an adult and being able to limit their own impulses. If they live their childhood, whenever I have an urge to just go to my phone, to spend hours gaming, to be on social media, then that's how I start to habitually live my life. And anytime I have an urge or I want something, I just do it. So putting in limits, and again, back to what Darren was saying, the responsibility of us to teach our children and to put limits in place in an effective way, again, because limits can be done ineffectively. And yes, there are ways to limit gaming. Now, it is much harder if, you know, they've been doing it for the last 4 years straight, and suddenly, oh, you know what? I read this great book about limit setting. Let's try. You're going to have a lot of struggles there. And that's okay, because change is constant. You have to do things little by little, and you have to do it effectively and mindfully. And limit setting doesn't mean, again, there's the extremes. That doesn't mean you're becoming punitive and everything is a no, no. Actually, look for every opportunity to say yes with your children. The more yeses, the better. At the same time, you got to balance them. And there's a time to say no.
That's great advice right there. Do you think that's a big one that people have a hard time with? I feel like a lot of people, and it could be just from the way I was brought up, but the saying yes a lot. Like I feel like there was a lot of no's when I grew up, and it was just it was more of just from a controlling sort of, or even just a subconscious need to control or something weird like that. I feel like that's a big one.
It is a big one. And John Gottman, I mentioned this in the book, I borrowed some of his research with relationships and marriages. And he did about 20, 30 years of research of watching videos of interactions. And he actually found the magic ratio, he calls it, of a positive to negative. And in order to decrease and predictors of relationships leading to divorce or ending relationships was a ratio of, in order to sustain marriages, 5 to 1, 5 positive for every 1 negative. Because negative interactions are a part of all our relationships because we are human. And or sometimes we have to put limits and sometimes we have to make room for emotion. I think it's really important. He actually calls it positive sentiment override, is that if you have more of that, it overrides the negative. So I think it's really important that we focus a lot on positivity. And that's really why I chose to focus on acceptance first before the change.
Right.
Because I really wanted parents to connect, to show their love. Because when the children feel understood, validated, that you're present, then they'll hear the no very differently.
Right, exactly, exactly. It means a little bit more, right? It's more sincere. It carries more weight when the no comes, right?
Absolutely. I put this in the book. It's one of my favorite stories. And there was a mom I was working with. She had a teenage daughter. Maybe she was 11, 12 at the time. And this young girl had her struggles. And she was fighting mom with everything. And mom did not know how to put up limits. And this child would manipulate her way through everything. And I really helped mom to put up limits, to say no, to be consistent in the rules and the guidelines. And it came to Mother's Day. And they gave out to all the children to fill out what you love about your mom. And she brought this into me, and in one box it said, I love that my mom has a bedtime for me and has rules.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was such an important, and this was on her own. It wasn't like she was told, but the idea is that a child feels loved and cared about if the parent effectively says, you know what, it's late. It's time to go to bed. You know, the children who are out doing whatever they want till who knows what time at night, where there are no rules, they actually grow up feeling not cared about. They feel like their parents are just, who cares what happens to me?
Oh, that's interesting. I would never think of it that way. Does that make sense to you, Darren, as a parent?
I don't know. I'm probably a bit of a pushover as a parent. I mean, I got two little girls who kind of push me around a little bit, but I mean, I don't have to yell at him really if, you know, when it's bedtime or time to get off the screen or, you know, just time to do stuff, I kind of just got to raise my voice a decibel or two so they know I'm done messing around and they'll fall into line pretty quick. So I'm pretty lucky in that regard. My kids listen great. I can't complain.
Well, you said a couple of things, Darren, that we were talking about. Firstly, is you play around with them. It means you have a good time with your kids. There's a lot of positivity. And perhaps that message is that when it's time, they know you're a little bit more assertive, you're a little bit more intense, and they get that message really clear. And you have that connection with them. You have that relationship with them, and therefore they were going to respond. Number two is, I bet you are not a complete pushover. Every single parent has limits. Somewhere they're confused or they're struggling. I was having a conversation with someone on limit setting, and I said to them, my example was a little extreme, but I wanted to bring my point. I said, well, some said, well, I don't have limits. I let my kids do. I'm sort of relaxed. I said, okay, so you're at the dinner table. Your teen walks in, lies across your dinner table, takes out some heroin, and starts shooting themselves up right there in front of your family, in front of your kids on the table. Oh, I don't have limits. I think we all have limits, right? And I think we would act immediately on that for the safety of our other children in the home. There's always a point, some point. And I think if your kids are responding well to you, but sometimes you will put your foot down. You know, if they decide that day, you know, I want to. So it's really, and I talk a lot about this in the book too, in terms of limit setting, is the balance of consistency and flexibility. And that it's not, when we parent, there's no right way to parent.
But there's lots of wrong ways.
I love that. I think there are lots more, and I'm going to even say there are a lot of, I'm going to use my word, there are a lot of ineffective ways that can create tremendous, significant harm to the child and to their future. Children, and I see this all the time because I work with a lot of people who have histories of trauma, emotional trauma, a complex childhood trauma, which is quite significant. Of course, physical abuse and sexual abuse. And when they're young, they're most vulnerable. They don't realize their world is you, the parent. They don't know anything else. And that's why, to your point, you're parenting ineffectively. And there is a place for wrong, certainly, can really be harmful. I remember, I'll never forget this, when I was in my master's program, there was a teacher, and she was like the teacher, like everyone. She taught the clinical casework, and she actually was an immigrant herself, and she talks about the sexual, physical abuse she went through all life. And she turned to all of us at one point in the class, and she said, as therapists, you can never harm the client. You could only slow the process. And I think she was totally wrong. I think I understood the truth and what she was trying to say. But when you have someone in a vulnerable state, you can, especially a therapist to a client, you can create a lot of harm. And a parent to a child in an even more vulnerable state, you could create a lot of harm.
So and what you're I mean even is on a higher pedestal than a therapist.
Well, oh, you mean as a parent?
Yeah, I mean, you might as well be God for all intents and purposes.
Exactly. You are their world. You are it. There is nothing else. If daddy says, you know, something, you know, it must be the right way. Now, as they get up, and I've seen this also, how do people start to understand that something's wrong? I mean, I've seen cases as severe as incest, right? When they open that book or that newspaper article, when they open up to like that one friend or teacher when they're becoming a teenager and they're struggling, and they look at them and they're like, are you crazy? Are you serious? That's not normal. And the child thought that was completely normal. That was the way that kids got beaten, or their emotions were important, or parents worked all day and never made time for their kids. That's just the way the world was. Or mom and dad fight. That's what moms and dads do. They fight. They throw things at each other. that is their world. They don't know anything different. And I think the harm is, you know, beyond words. When I say there's no right way to parent, what I mean is don't get stuck on that one trip, that one trend. You know, there, if this is not working, then we have to figure out what's going to be more effective. And back to Graham's point, you know, the world is constantly changing. Now we got technology in there. We have to parent differently. We have to take in, you know, if we would parent the same way they parented 200 years ago, probably wouldn't be as effective now.
Before we let you run off, where can our listeners track down the book? Where can they track down your stuff if they want to get in touch? Is there a way to do that?
By the way, I listened to the audiobook. It was very good.
Oh, yeah. Well, awesome. Thank you. You're actually the first person I got feedback on the audiobook.
All right. So there you go.
Thank you. Yeah. So firstly, you can go to my website, theuncontrollablechild.com. And on my website, there's all your favorite sellers, online sellers. It's also, the book's also in Barnes & Nobles and other local bookstores. You can actually press any of those links. If you want to go to Amazon or, again, whoever your favorite seller is, you purchase the book. If you actually go back to my website, by the way, you take your invoice number and your receipt number, and you put it into the website, I have lots of bonus material.
Oh, that's great. I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, you have the whole cards and the roadblocks and all that.
We've got a lot of stuff there that can be really helpful. And I explain a lot of the downloads. I also have on my blog page, I did a 12-part series of where I read parts of the book and gave some relatable examples. So that's there too. I have a master class coming for parents, for mental health professionals, for educators. So you can all get that on the website. I'm also on LinkedIn if you want to follow me there under Montes Miller, or Facebook. On the website too, if you want to get in contact with me directly, Graham, you mentioned that. If you go to the bottom, scroll all the way to the bottom, there's a place to contact me and you can shoot me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Any thoughts, feedback, what's working and what's not working.
That's great. I like how you've made it more than just the book. It's kind of interactive as well. People can go there and how do you actually do that? If you don't mind me asking, is it a receipt? Like, are your books serialized or something? Or are they kind of, or
no, how does this that functionally? This is the open part that we say everything as it is. The truth is you could put in 1, 2, 3. It's probably going to work too.
Yeah, I figured.
I love the idea. Yeah. I love the idea. Well, because we were just doing an audiobook for somebody. We were talking about how to access like notes and diagrams and stuff on a website. Yeah. So
it's just a way of capturing people's information so you can keep in touch with them.
Yeah, fantastic. I like it. Yeah, you kind of register there and then you can get all those extra goodies that help. I mean, I really do think that you've made it very actionable for people. Like, keep track of this and that. Yes. Use the cards, use the functional stuff. Like, I really do feel like if I was a parent, I'd be like following that. I mean, I really liked it. And I'm not even a parent. So.
That
I know of.
Are you having any more kids or are you done now? I mean, six is, you could go for a ball team.
I think we're good.
You got a hockey team, you could go for a whole ball team.
I think we're good. I think if you can ask my wife, you know, she always said also, she's like, we never had twins. Because God knows what she can handle. So I think,
Well, Modest,
six keeps on our toes. Yeah.
Thank you very much for your time here tonight, for coming on the show, for the book. Come back anytime.
Yes, I appreciate it. And hopefully we'll cross paths sometime in the future. All right.
Thanks, buddy. See you later.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye.
And that was the first half of our chat with Matas Miller. See, I pronounce it right.
Matas.
What did you think, buddy?
It was pretty good. Did you pronounce it right at the beginning? I can't remember if you got it right the first time or not. I did,
but you didn't in the intro, but that's okay. I'm sure you understand.
My Indian tongue don't work like that.
Sorry, yeah, Maltus. That's right. I mean, Maltus. I found this chat very awesome with you and your kids too. And like it kind of got us a chance to like, I don't think we talk about really how you raise your kids that much on the show. So
it was cool.
It was cool to be able to talk about that a little bit.
Nobody's business.
Or was that in the second half?
I can't remember, but it might have been in the second half. I wouldn't be surprised if that was in the second half.
Yeah, I think maybe it was. I didn't have notes on it for some reason.
Yeah, it's an anomaly. No. Maybe it didn't even happen. Maybe you dreamed it. Maybe you could make your dreams come true and head over to grimericaoutlaw.ca. Sign up for Plus today. Get that second half. Maybe you get my kid's story. And Graham, tell us what else you get in that second half.
Well, I mean, geez, we do have the chance to talk about some personal. We have personal questions for him on how to deal with different types of people. You know, different difficult personalities, people with borderline personality disorder. I mean, I've been through that in the past, having to sort of figure out if I can make those relationships work or get out of those relationships. So, I mean, it was an opportunity for us to speak to an expert that's dealt with, I mean, he's dealt with BPD and narcissistic personality disorder as like his career for a few years. I think he talked about that. So we got a chance to pick his brain about that. And then we talk about positive reinforcement as well and how that like technically works, you know, not just a fucking, it's not just a cliche. It really does work. And we talked about.
I should
about,
bring those reports in and show them to the power.
And we talked about the 12-year-old My Body, My Choice with the whole vaccine thing and opposing truths and political learning and DBT and CBT. And of course, that you know, we talked about society at large, trauma, and seeing the truth over both perspectives and how right now there's so many lines being crossed. And dealing with people, of course, that may have a borderline personality disorder and. Like I already mentioned, regulating emotions. And then, of course, the last 10 or 15 years with the increase in mindfulness training for kids. Like I read that Siegel book 13, 15 years ago, maybe. And now it does seem like all those researchers on mindfulness are making headway and there's more and more education happening with kids. I think that's great.
You were reading kids' books 15 years ago?
No. It was, it was The Mindful Brain.
Oh. I was going to say, that's where we're getting ready. Did you have a scare?
Very funny.
Yeah, it's a great second half. If you're not a Plus member yet, we encourage you to head over this week, grimericaoutlaw.ca. Sign up for that Plus subscription. You're going to get like 26, 27, 28, however many episodes we've already gone through. Get all the ones coming forward. There's a bunch of articles in there we read as well. But, $6 a month. You can't go wrong. GrimericaOutlaw.ca. Head over to GrimAmerica.ca/swag if you want to just get some shirts and shit. You can join the chats. GrimAmerica.ca/chats. What else we got?
Audiobooks.
Audiobooks.
Email Graham@GrimAmerica.com with ideas, guest suggestions, feedback.
Threats.
I'm on Instagram. Instagram's not working very well lately. I'm there less and less, which is okay, I guess. But, you know.
Instagram sucks.
Battlebrain.ca is the audiobooks. Yeah. That's about it.
America.ca/support if you just want to give us a little extra pat on the back. We love you guys. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next week.
Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never political anyhow. Since when did you start trusting in the government? Since when was it okay to ridicule and shame your neighbor? Your opinions have become as fickle as artificial flavors. What matters most to you? What the TV host told you to do, or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never religious anyhow. Since when did you kiss the ring on the hand of the Pope? Since when do we need pharmaceuticals to cope? Your soul has become, ever-loving soul has become, as brittle as communion wafers. What matters most to you? What the Holy Ghost told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. Bureaucrats think I'm non-essential anyhow. Since when has our culture become so lowbrow? It's all touchscreens, and nobody has any know-how. Your idea of fun is taking 1,001 photos of your duck face. Matters most to you? what the celebrities most told you was cool, or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your 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 sacred cow.